Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush. Chuck here in the studio at Pond City Market with Noel on my left. If you want to picture it in your mind's eye, sort of diagonal left, kitty corner, as we call it here in the South. This week on the show was my first live Movie Crush. And the wonderful and lovely Janet Varney, who was the pilot episode guest, is my good pal. And she curates and co-created Sketchfest in San Francisco, the, for my money, best comedy festival in the land every January. And she said, hey, would you like to do your first Movie Crush Live? And, of course, I was way into it, but a little nervous to, you know, because it was very early on the show, to see if I could even sell tickets. And we were at the Punchline in San Francisco and ended up getting about 100 people that came out. And for the size of that room, it felt great, and really, really want to thank everyone who came out to see this and support me in my first live endeavor. It means so, so much to me to see all the smiling faces out there and talk to everyone before and after. It was just a lot of fun. And Tony Hale, like I said before, is legit the nicest guy I've ever met in the entertainment industry. We rode there from the hotel together in the car and hung out backstage and had a lot of weird connections, some of which I think we talk about in the show. But Tony is just a great, great guy, and it was so lovely to have him on. And his movie crush was Punch Drunk Love from P.T. Anderson. Just a great, great movie. And here we go, without any further ado, with Tony Hale live in San Francisco on Punch Drunk Love. Hi, everybody. This is great. I was so nervous that no one was going to come, because 3 weeks ago, nobody was going to come. And sold like 12 tickets, and that was super embarrassing. But hugely appreciate this. As everyone knows, it's a new solo show for me, outside of Stuff You Should Know. Does everyone here listen to Stuff You Should Know? Is there literally one person here who does not? All right, great. Is anyone coming to Stuff You Should Know tonight? Ooh. Is anyone also going to the Baskets panel that I'm moderating? No? Okay. Baskets is a TV show with Zach Galifianakis. Great show. You should watch it. I just wondered if anyone was literally going to see me do three things today. And I was going to apologize. And speaking of apologizing, everyone knows that I have tooth issues, and I am missing this one. So you here on the front row, there might be air coming your way from the right-hand side. But thanks for coming. And right now, we might as well get to it. And from Veep and Arrested Development and a host of other things, the great Mr. Tony Hale. There he is. I just realized how weird it is to say the great Mr.
Hello. I like it.
Let me take off my jacket. Let's get into it.
All right. I'm taking off my shirt then.
Yeah.
Hello, all. How are you? Good.
I feel like we should be doing like a ventriloquism bit.
Really?
Yeah, like we should have dummies on our laps right now.
Sure.
So, Tony. All right, I'm going to put this away for now. And by the way, we're going to finish up with a little Q&A at the end. And there is a microphone there, but it's such a small venue, you can just bark out questions if you want, after you're called on.
This is such a nice venue.
Isn't it?
It's like the prototypical like, stand-up venue you'd think of. Anyways.
Imagine
guys,
if you were...
this is the kind of wisdom you're going to get the whole hour.
Imagine if you're tall, this would be kind of interesting.
That's true.
Have you ever
an
done
stand-up? An hour of this.
Did you ever do stand-up?
No.
No?
That I've done sketch comedy. But stand-up, I just think, is the most – it would seem like the most naked feeling and just
right.
Kind of like right now.
Like, why would anyone want to do that?
But it's like Jim Gaffigan, I'm a huge fan of his stuff. And just like the amount of time he works on bits, and I have a huge admiration for it.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe one day.
No.
All you do is get on hit TV shows, but you might as well trade that all in to –
I can see, though, that it's like a rush to it. Like, people get that kind of, and finding it, but they got to workshop it, and just when people, you know, boo them and all that kind of stuff, they just kind of get that thick skin. I don't have that thick skin at all. Just like, why don't you like me? Like me.
So we were chatting backstage and getting to know each other a little bit. And so I know a few of the things I'm going to ask you, so don't think that I have amnesia or that I wasn't listening.
No, please.
But this is for the benefit of the audience. But on Movie Crush, we like to start out a little bit with some of your past. I know you are a deep encyclopedic film nut.
Mm.
No, I'm kidding.
No, I'm not.
No, I know. Backstage, he was saying, by the way, like, I'm not, I hope this isn't like a quiz. This isn't.
But it's a part of it is my wife makes fun of me, which is the great base of a marriage. But because I have a hard time disengaging from films. I don't know if anybody else is like that. If it's too emotional or if it's too much, I just can't separate it. And yeah. She's like, you're an actor. Like, that doesn't make sense. But there's just something. And I was telling somebody Friday night that even, like, I remember what we were – this is not a film. We were watching The Office. And I have – sometimes I have to go to the kitchen because it's too uncomfortable. And in my head, I'm like, just fire the guy. Just get him – just, like, just get him out. And it's like even like Disney movies are really intense, like Tangled. You know, it's like she was abducted from her parents and then she's put in solitary confinement with a witch.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and then like Frozen, they die in a boat accident and then the child is left in her room, in her frozen room forever, and then she hasn't seen her sister on the other side of the room and she's like, will you build a snowman with me? And I'm just like, I can't. I'm done. It's just too much. And not to mention, that's like a cartoon. Yeah. You know, so if it gets too heavy, I just like... Oh, and don't even bring horror. I don't see why anybody wants to watch...
Oh,
Paranormal Activity shit? Uh-uh.
No.
I'm not playing with that. I have a hard time turning off the lights just in general.
Yeah, like, let's make a movie that will literally... not make you want to sleep in your own bed.
Yeah. Oh, and the, like, I'm just gonna get started. Nightmare on Elm Street? Come on! I thought those hands were coming up from that bed and just ripped me open.
Yeah. I'm your girlfriend now, Nancy.
Yeah.
Oh. That's the only line I remember.
And that's just so awful and smart at the same time that you think you can get in people's dreams.
Uh-huh.
What a tactic. You know,
yeah.
That you're terrified to effing go to sleep, man.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to say effing. You can bleep that.
Well, we were chatting backstage. My wife is here. Everyone probably knows who Emily is. She will not, and now that we have a kid, we kind of have to watch some of these movies. But before we had Ruby, she was like, I'm not watching any of those animated films, because she was ruined by literally by Bambi when she was a kid.
Oh, who wouldn't be?
Yeah, and she's like, nope, can't do it. I think she saw Up. Because that was really good.
Yeah.
And
see,
I know.
The reaction?
First 10 minutes of that movie, is there anything sadder
it's
on
like
the planet?
An old man being flown away by balloons. Who wouldn't watch that?
But we were talking about Inside Out. And
that's not a watch.
Yeah.
Because that's one of my top five just films that I love. Because it's like the fact that, you know, when you embrace sadness and it goes with happiness.
It's the
and,
best.
You know, it's the best. Mm-hmm. And it's so smart. Pixar's got that formula, man.
Yeah. We took Ruby to her first movie ever, actually. We went and saw Coco.
About a month ago. Stunning. Have you guys seen that?
Maybe the best looking movie I've ever seen in my life. Just
unbelievable. Beautiful.
And Emily was worried. She's like, well, she's just going to want to leave and she's not going to sit still. And I was like, well, if she does, then we'll leave. But let's give it a shot.
Yeah.
For 90% of that movie, it was this.
Oh, yeah.
And the other 10%, she wanted to sit on the stairs.
Sure. Great.
Which Emily went and sat with her, and that was great. And then she came back.
Do they still have when you can bring your baby to movies where it's like adult? I remember there was like movies where you could bring your child like adult movies and stuff. Like not
Mr. Hollywood.
Sorry. No, like not animated.
I'm from Atlanta. I'm just a simple guy.
No, like if it was like, I don't know, like Independence Day or something like that. But you could, it was like during the day and you could bring your child. I don't know. Anyways, do those still exist?
I don't know, but I love that Independence Day was the first thing that came to your head.
It just seems like a lot for a child to watch.
Okay, so you were born, though, in Florida, correct? Or just grew up in Florida?
I grew up in Florida. I was born in West Point, New York.
Okay.
My dad taught nuclear physics at West Point, went to West Point and then taught nuclear physics. and birthed me. My wife, my mother. And then, so I was born there, and then we traveled around. I was an Army brat for a long time.
Gotcha.
And then in seventh grade, we moved to Tallahassee, Florida, and that's where I mainly grew up.
Okay, so that was your kind of early formative high school years.
Yeah.
Tallahassee.
Yes.
Through graduation.
Yeah, and I was very new to the South. I was not a kid who was into sports and stuff, so it was like, it was a big adjustment. But my parents found this theater company called Young Actors Theater. And that's what it was. I could be a spaz there, and it was great.
So your parents were into – were they actors at all or
– No, but my dad was not. My mom was – she was – neither one of them really were on the outs, but my grandfather, my dad's dad, was an opera singer. And he also he died very young, but he would MC those like those shows in New York, those variety shows like Earl Carroll Follies and all this kind of stuff. And randomly at some point when he worked with Vincent Minnelli back in New York, and it's cool that Liza Minnelli and I on Arrested Development were like,
oh yeah,
boyfriend and girlfriend.
That's one of the more disturbing subplots of that
you
show.
You say disturbing. I say amazing.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and so there was a weird like connection. Yeah,
that's cool. And how awesome like is it for you to have gotten these two like iconic characters on two of the best comedies of the past, you know, decade.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. We've been shooting the new season of Arrested, and
oh, that's right. Great.
And it's been we started in 2003. It's been 15 years that we've been this kind of journey has gone on.
Everyone just
and
wants
Buster's
more.
Just as messed up.
Yeah,
but it's really fun. And Mitch Hurwitz, you know, who created the show, is the guy. What the grid, the comic grid he has in his head of how this all works out. Something happened this past season, which I can't share. But I was like, "What?" It was such a surprise. And then he kind of played it where he had known how the grid worked from years ago. And wow. I remember when my hand was bitten off a seat with a spy seal.
Yeah,
which is the typical storyline, along with Liza Minnelli. I remember I didn't know it was going to come off. And then, but, you know, episodes before, Buster had, like, a hand chair and, like, all these symbols. And I remember thinking, oh, that's cute. He has a hand chair. That's sweet. And there's all these hand references, you know. And then that came off.
Such a good show. And I've heard that he's just some, like, crazy genius. Like,
he really, it's really one of those things where you, because I think the word genius is kind of thrown around a lot. I get it so much. No. But it's like he really has that kind of touch of genius where things just come out and you're like, whoa. I remember one time, I've told this story before, but we were kind of talking about storylines, and I remember going up to him being like, yeah, wouldn't it be funny if like Buster was like on Dancing with the Stars or something like that? He's like, yeah, but I think I'm going to have a seal bite off his hand. I was like, that's better. And even the thing of like a Lucille cut off his hand, and my mom's name is Lucille. And all that kind of stuff. It's just like
I never put that together.
Yeah, it's just so all those little things that were really. And at the time, we didn't have DVR or anything, and so you couldn't really rewind. And so, but it was so dense what he created.
Yeah, and now Veep. Speaking of dense, when we were talking backstage, Veep is for my money the best written show on TV. And I was telling him that that's a show that I will rewatch episodes sometimes. Because I easily miss 30% of the jokes.
I do, too.
It's, I mean, what's the old rule with comedy? Like, how many jokes per page?
I don't know.
I can't remember. So many jokes per page, but I feel
it's
like
the exact
Veep
guest you want of a question. I don't know.
I feel like Veep has, like, five times the amount of jokes per page.
And they're just super smart. And
yeah.
Thankfully, my character doesn't really have to know about politics. He's just obsessed with her, like what her shade of lipstick is that day. And
right.
That's
you
all
have
I
to know
about
hot tea. And
Yeah. Very good with tea. But, you know, it's fun playing a character because, you know, they're just so – these writers work so incredibly hard. But I love that I was described – my character was described as a bitchy mime this past season. And it's true because I can't speak, so I just kind of give these. I like give all these crazy facial expressions behind
it's
her,
the best.
And she. It's weird because she, as the president at the time, many whatever she was in the journey, there's things she can't say.
Uh-huh.
But like my nonverbal is like if she's talking to somebody she doesn't like, and she's like, "Oh, nice to meet you," I'm in the back going, "Ooh,
yeah." There's a lot of Charlie Chaplin in that role. I feel
I
like
I love that.
You know,
thanks.
Because you're right. There's a lot of you know, stumbling into something and oh, I got to get back out of here. And did she see me do this? And
yeah.
It's all nonverbal.
And he has no identity outside of her. You know,
yeah.
He hates being taller than her. Like if he could cut off like 3 feet just to be below her.
He's probably considered that. I get the feeling, you know.
Yeah, and it's my posture has gotten so bad cuz I'm so Gary so wants to be below her, you know.
Yeah. Is he in love with her?
Yeah.
Well, I mean it feels like that, but it also feels like it's he also wants her to be mommy.
All of it.
Maybe that's yeah. Okay.
Yeah, all of it. There's probably a lot of pictures with strings, psycho killer thing at his apartment.
Right. Dr. Yeah. Freud is nearby.
Yeah,
right, that's what I thought. What about movies when you were growing up? Were you in theater as a kid? Were you watching movies? Were you?
I mainly did a lot of theater through this theater company. But I was thinking about that because when you kind of were talking about this and kind of growing up, and the movie that I always remember is Goonies for some reason.
Sure.
Goonies, and I was kind of thinking about it and looking it up and stuff, and it came out in 1985, and that's the time that I was a freshman in high school.
Yeah.
I had really bad asthma, like Mikey, the lead.
Uh-huh.
He always carried around his inhaler, and I had never seen an inhaler in film, and I was just like, my people.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just resonated with, and just the fact that, you know, our imagination as a kid, the thought of like the treasure map and finding the treasure map behind the picture in the attic and that chase and, you know, Sloth and just like all that kind of stuff. And then him going down the slide and there's, you know, the big boat and you're just like, what?
Yeah.
That's a fantasy. That is like the fantasy. Playing a piano that's made of bones. You know, it's like
that wasn't
my fantasy. But it was just like all this. I don't know. It was just that one stuck with me. Not many stuck with me.
Yeah,
but that one really stuck with me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we're almost the exact same age, right?
Yeah.
So to be
did you graduate 88?
89.
Oh, okay.
So to be 13, 14 years old when the Goonies comes out, it's very easy to go to that place where you are a Goonie.
Yeah.
Because it was such a like great kid's adventure and had that great heart and spirit to it. And
I think I resonated too because Mikey had that older brother, Josh Brolin.
Are you sure?
And I had an older brother who was like the jock. All the girls were just like, Mike. And I remember in high school, when I got to high school, I so desperately wanted people to know that he was my brother.
Uh-huh.
I would, when he was like with a group of girls or the popular kids, I'd go up to him and be like, hey, Mike, Mom wanted me to give you this pencil.
Give you this pencil.
Yeah. And he was just like, oh, shut up. And then, not kidding, the next day I'd come up and be like, did you get your lunch from Mom? I was just so like, see, I'm with him.
Uh-huh.
You know.
How much older is he?
He's 4 years older.
Yeah, so that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
My brother's 3 years older, and everyone that listens to Stuff You Should Know knows the legend of my brother. He's just sort of one of these super smart, great looking, perfect hair, perfect everything.
Right.
Metabolism of a child, and then came me.
Sure.
And my parents are very sweet and accepting of who I turned out to be. But now, my brother makes the joke now that he's Frank Stallone.
Yeah.
Because of the success of Stuff You Should Know. He's like, yeah, I always knew it was going to flip one day. So, anyway, Scott's the best. But yeah, it's kind of to have that older brother that you idolize. And we're still so close.
Yeah, we were not close growing up.
Oh, was he?
We're very, very close now, but
right.
We were not close. He was a big soccer player, and my dad tried to coach soccer, and I would like make sandcastles in the ground. Like the ball would come, and I would just be staring at the clouds. You know, and he was just like Anthony. I was Anthony. He was like, get in there and play. And I was just so not. There was so much else to look at.
Yeah.
But my brother was like really into it and stuff.
Uh-huh. It's funny. I remember I played church softball growing up, as a good Southern Baptist boy does.
Sure. I was raised Southern Baptist too.
Well, that's right. We bonded over this backstage. Yep. And I remember very specifically there was this one kid at my church who didn't live there long, but I looked out at one point and he was doing the Anthony Hale.
Yeah.
He was literally on his
crying.
Knees playing. No, he's playing in the dirt during the game.
Yeah.
completely not watching. And I remember the coaches yelling at him.
Oh.
And I was a sensitive kid.
Sure.
And sensitive to other, and I'm still very sensitive to not only myself, but to everyone else's needs around me.
Yeah, sure, sure, sure.
And I remember feeling so bad for that kid.
Oh, yeah.
To be singled out like that and embarrassed. But I don't think he cared, actually, now that I look back.
Yeah, yeah. I told this story Friday night, too, at this other thing. I remember being in a swim meet, and it was during the meet, and my dad said I just stopped, and it was with a pool where you could stand up. And I stood up, and everybody was swimming around me, and he said, my dad goes, he looked at me and was like, keep going. And he said I had this face that was like, why? I'm exhausted.
He's like, does everyone know you can stand?
Yeah, I was like, I don't get this.
It's like totally not deep here, everyone.
A question, why are we here?
Yeah. That's funny. We took our kid to our very first little swim class the other day.
And yours is 2.5.
Yeah, yeah.
Mine's 12. She's getting so
big. She's swimming laps around your kid.
Oh, no. But I can't believe how big they get.
I know. It's very sad. So were you on...
The air conditioning just came on. That feels good.
Right?
Yeah.
Any other siblings?
I have an oldest sister, uh-huh. Kim, who's a social worker in Raleigh.
Oh, cool.
And she's the best. They're both just the best.
Isn't that fun when you get to be adults? And I mean, we all got along when we were younger, but I know other... friends that like they didn't get along or they just weren't close.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to be adults and you realize, hey,
like, and it's just growing up is just odd. It's just odd.
Yeah.
And my brother and I were very different. My sister and I were more alike, but there was such a big age gap, so we didn't really hang out that much. But we're all very, very close now.
Now, are they obviously proud of you? But are they like, what has happened here? Or do they think, oh, that makes sense?
I don't know if it ever. That makes sense. I mean, it's. I think, yeah, they're very, very proud. And I think it's fun to, like my sister came to the Emmys this past fall with me. And it's
that's
like,
great.
And my brother and his wife came 2 years ago. It was just stuff like, it's fun to get have them experience it.
You know,
I love that stuff.
That's cool.
Or maybe she came last year sometime, but it was fun.
That's great. Did you watch like family movies together, or was your brother out, you know, making out with chicks while you were
probably
watching the Goonies by yourself with your asthma inhaler?
I'm sure we did.
Uh-huh. Well, you said you have a bad memory, so that's
I
okay.
really have a very bad memory, and it's. But I was, I think, I mean, it was just moving around so much. I just as a kid, I just checked out, but. But also, I mean, I don't know if I was really into them. I don't remember. I remember watching, if we were doing like Grease in the theater, we would watch Grease as a cast. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that. God, guys, you are you're welcome. But even today, I mean, I think the movies that I – well, I guess we'll get to this. But the ones
no,
that –
say it.
Like
– say it.
Like like Punch Drunk Love is my favorite
mm-hmm.
– is my absolute favorite movie. And Lars and the Real Girl is another one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. You said that one as a backup. That's
and there's
great.
Just like – I don't know. There's certain ones that I really, really resonate with. I haven't seen Lady Bird yet. I really want to see Lady Bird. I don't know.
So great.
There's certain movies. But then other ones I'm just – I don't know if I can – if it's just something about trauma, I don't know. I just can't watch it. And then, good Lord, kids in trauma, forget about it. I can't even do that.
Yeah. Why did they even make those movies? Lady Bird's terrific. You should see that. But Lars and the Real Girl, it's funny you brought that up. That I was thinking about that movie the other day. And what – I don't know how that was pitched to a studio or whatever.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine –
it's about a blow-up doll.
Yeah. I can't imagine saying that out loud and then saying, but it's really a sweet love story.
Yeah.
About a guy in a blow-up doll that's really not at all creepy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's not. It's a very sweet story.
And it's such a powerful message about false intimacy and true intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he was so isolated and had no idea of true intimacy. And so he gets this doll because everybody needs connection. Everybody
needs
– and it will either turn to false or true. And because of his family and the community embracing this doll and he saw this true intimacy, then the doll died. you know, and like there was a beautiful scene when the doll, he has to put the doll to death or to the, and the community is in his living room just knitting, just to be in his presence. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, it's just a beautiful film.
And somehow they even they get away with casting Ryan Gosling, for God's sakes.
And he did great.
As the least likely dude to need a blow-up doll. But you buy it from the beginning. He really just, like, inhabited that character. I would not have thought, well,
cut to he has, like, 10 blow-up dolls at his house.
I mean, cast the most handsome guy in Hollywood.
And Craig Gillespie directed I, Tonya, the same director.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that yet. I heard it's really good.
I haven't seen it yet either.
Spoiler, I think there's an incident with a knee and a crowbar.
I don't know.
They shot that in Atlanta, actually.
Did they?
Yeah.
I love me some Allison Janney.
Yeah, she's the best.
She was on Veep. She played the morning news anchor or something in one of the episodes.
She's so great. All right, we'll get into Punch Drunk Love then.
All right, great.
That is a movie you do know, right?
Yes. I do.
Has everyone seen Punch Drunk Love? Did you do your homework? Okay, good. 2002, it's hard to believe it's that old.
It is hard to believe.
You know? Mm-hmm. It makes me, well, that and this Santa Claus beard both make me feel old. P.T. Anderson obviously wrote and directed, starring Adam Sandler, and what was his kind of first foray into...
drama.
Non-Adam Sandler movies.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know if you've seen the Meyerowitz stories yet on Netflix.
No, with Dustin Hoffman. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it yet. Is Ben Stiller in that too?
Yeah. And it's so good. And it sort of, has anyone else seen that, Meyerowitz stories? Oh, you should check that out. It's a new Noah Baumbach movie. Very good. But his character in that, Adam Sandler's, sort of feels like Barry Egan just years later. Mm-hmm. And when I see that movie and I see this, I just think, why would Adam Sandler do anything else but play these dramatic roles that he's great in?
Mm-hmm. Is it a film or is it, I thought it was like a...
No, it's just a movie.
Oh, okay.
And I know the answer is cold hard cash.
Yeah.
That Adam Sandler movies provide.
Sure.
So I get that. But
also, I've
so
heard
good
that he makes his sets are very, very family oriented.
I've heard that too.
That he, I think I might be speaking. I don't know, but it's like he has like kid camps while the crew is shooting that the crew's kids can go to.
That's great.
I think that might be true.
He shows adult movies
I'm, like,
to children.
Out angel stories.
Now, are you a big Paul Thomas Anderson fan in general?
Yeah, I was. Magnolia I love as well.
Yeah.
But there's something about Punch Drunk Love that just, just resonated. I loved his, Barry's character and just the way it was so shot so beautiful, the seven sisters and, I mean, we'll get into it, but I really loved it.
Yeah, it was after his first movie, Hard Eight, which was a very... You know, P.T. Anderson is not a light guy. So he makes that. He makes Boogie Nights. He makes Magnolia.
But the heart within his, I mean, he's not
for
light,
sure.
But like, man, he pushes some heart out in the story.
Yeah, in all of them. And but after those long, dense, kind of heavy movies, I remember when this came out. And I think on the press tours for Magnolia, they said, you know, what's next? And he very famously would say, like, I want to do an Adam Sandler comedy. And everyone laughed. Mm. And what did he do? He went and he calls it his Adam Sandler art house film. Mm. And he was very serious about doing that. And he did so to the effect of a 97-minute long love story that's just so, so sweet. And it was such a breath of fresh air for himself as a filmmaker, from what I've read. It was something he really needed to do. Just to sort of have something a lighter for a change.
I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
Because now there's a lot of films that, you know, very quirky, but at the time it was just like, I just never had seen that.
Yeah.
There's a moment in the movie that is just, for, you know, how he starts very isolated and this love comes into his life and he just transforms. And there's that moment when he's sitting with Emily Watson. They're driving in the car, and then the gang that Philip Seymour Hoffman sends to beat him up or something.
The weird gang from the mattress company.
Yeah, the mattress company. And I think they push him. There's a wreck or something, but he looks over at Emily Watson, has a cut on his face, and he takes a crowbar and just goes off on them.
Yeah.
And it was – and just seeing that transition from how he was so meek, even with all of his sisters and his family, and then just when that love came into his life, he was just like, don't mess with her.
Yeah.
and just lost it.
Yeah, that's one of the great
theater
moments.
Like, whoa!
Yeah, yeah, you know? Those two. It's like,
and
fuck
then we
those
stood
guys
up, stood up to him, to Philip Seymour Hoffman. In the end, he's like, "I have a love in my life that is so much greater than you will ever know."
Yeah,
it's like, oh.
I know, it's so great. Roger Ebert, in his review, was talking about how much he loved the fact that you don't know what's going to happen next in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And that scene where he confronts Philip Seymour Hoffman is so, like, you know, he's so angry in his life, period, because he's smashing windows and sliding glass doors.
Yeah.
And he has all this pent-up rage and anxiety from who knows what in his life, aside from his vulgar, overbearing sisters.
Sure.
But I remember when he... that moment, the first time I saw it, when he confronts Philip Seymour Hoffman, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman's scared of him.
Yeah, and Philip Seymour Hoffman was scary.
He was very scary, and he tried to out-tough him, but he knew, and even when he goes to walk out of the mattress warehouse, he kind of says, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman yells one more thing.
And he turns right back
around. And he
starts
back, and he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Great
moment. He had that love in him that was greater than anything else he had. Guys, I'm all preach.
So let's talk for a second about just the color and the visual and the music from John Bryan. It was really like an exercise, I think, in shadow and light and color and sound, like more so than many movies I see.
I also, in transitions, there was like these bars of color that would kind of go across. Have you heard of the whole Superman theory with it?
No.
Okay, so this my friend Daryl recently told me this, and the whole, because I've kind of looked into it because I knew I was going to be coming here, and people talk about, I don't know if this is true because I'm clearly throwing out a lot of theories tonight, but that it was a Superman version of. If you notice, like, little things where he's wearing, he starts off always wearing a blue suit, blue tie.
Right.
Love comes into his life, Emily Watson, who only wears red all the time. And then when she comes in, he starts wearing a red tie. And then there's this shot in the very end when she covers him and she says, "Here we go," like Lois Lane and Superman did in the end. And she's kind of his cape. And her initials are LL. Lee, I forgot her name, the Emily Watson character, Lena something, but it's LL.
I can't remember last name.
And there's all these kind of like him, like there's a him flying jump, but it's also in the beginning, the plungers were kind of like this glass thing, which was very reminiscent to Superman's home base when these kind of all these crystals and stuff. And there's just all of these like theories of like, it's his version of Superman. Yeah. And
that's
it's like, and when a strength, the supernatural strength that he had, where he would just start bashing the windows.
Right.
And then when he's holding the glass plunger, he says, these cannot break. And he goes, push, and it breaks, but it's because of he has the supernatural strength, like Superman.
That's pretty great.
Pretty great, right?
Yeah.
I never even thought about that.
I didn't either. That's awesome. And then, of course, you know, red, white, and blue are the three primary colors that he uses.
Yeah, yeah.
And the
Seven Sisters, there's a lot of green of the whole kryptonite thing.
Oh.
When there's a shot of them in the house. Again, I hope Paul Thomas Anderson's not listening to this and being like, nope.
Paul Thomas Anderson is not listening to this.
It's like, that's a negative. But there is this shot of all the three sisters, and there's like this big green square in the back. And then, I forgot her name, Mary Wren.
Yeah, Mary Lynn. I don't know how you pronounce it.
She's wearing a green shirt. I mean, it's like this whole kind of how toxic they were to him.
Uh-huh.
You know, but Emily Watson, man, the love and the strength that
the
came
savior.
Into his life. Oh, and then when the... When the car came, the car wreck in the beginning, that was reminiscent of him, Superman as a baby, coming into the Earth, and then dropped, and the piano just dropped, and it became this, you know, this home space for him. Or
wow.
Like yeah. Guys.
Tony Hale, blowing minds.
No, that's my friend, this Daryl guy. I actually met him 2 days ago at Sketchfest.
Tony's new friend Daryl, blowing minds.
I'm not kidding. He was kind enough to drive me from the airport, and we were talking about this. Yes. And he's the sweetest guy. And he was like, well, you've heard of the Superman theory. And I was like, no. And then I went on this like research thing. And so it's all about Daryl, sweet little man who drove me from the airport.
Well, Tony, Daryl was a plant.
Oh.
It's funny, the guy who Sketchfest has drivers that kind of drive everyone to and fro. And our driver on the way here, Doug, was pretty great.
Very nice.
And he's a Stuff You Should Know listener. And brought up the Burning Man episode, and the rest of the ride was about Burning Man.
There was a lot of Burning Man, and he was talking about, he was very into it, which I really admire and stuff. And then he says, oh my gosh, would you ever like to do this? And I was like, absolutely not. It sounds awful.
You were being so sweet the whole ride, just asking, and then he literally said, oh, you should go. And you went, oh, I'd never do that. That sounds terrible.
It's just like, there's just no...
You wounded him a bit.
Oh, I know, and I felt bad.
Yeah.
But I'm not ever doing that. It's just tremendous crowds, which is just
nightmare. Dust
everywhere.
A lot
of dust, no water.
Yeah. It's just... Are there any burners here?
I'm sure there are, and I apologize.
Yes, sir. So sorry. It's
you can't recognize anybody because everybody's in costume. Large fire, man burning, actually.
I know. He's talking about people dying every year.
I know. There's like people dying.
Oh, this sounds great.
I'm signing up.
No running water. No electricity. Possible death.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Where were we here? okay. So the very first shot in this movie is when the car flips. And then just in a very P.T. Anderson random way, that harmonium, the pump organ is dropped off.
Yeah.
The guy gets out of there. And then it's pretty clear that that harmonium literally is harmony for him. Mm-hmm. And that there are many shots in the movie where he's either hugging it or he runs back into the office and is just kind of like has his arm on it.
Yeah.
And it becomes this weird whoopee in certain ways.
Yeah. And I think I what I love about that is this is how I think why I resonated with it is because you look at it and the whole time you're confused. What's up with the piano being dropped off? Who dropped off the piano? What's happening? But the fact that it was comforting, and as a spiritual person, I embrace the unknown a lot.
Right.
Like there's many questions about faith. There's so many questions. We don't have answers to so many things. You can't see God. You can't. But and yet I go to Him, and like even you look like an ocean. It's so daunting, but like it's very peaceful at the same time. So it's like there was something about that that I really loved.
That's nice.
And I'm gonna preach.
And then the weird subplot of the healthy choice pudding cups.
And
the air miles, the sky miles.
Another Superman thing.
Really?
Because the flying thing.
You're intimidating me right now. Your finger was so close to my face.
I did this like promo once where I was talking and I was like pointing because it was to raise money for something. I was like, you need to do this. Or not, I was kind about it, but I was like, oh yeah, this is it. Do it. And then I saw it and I was, damn, I did a lot of pointing and that's just going to push people away. I understand now why they do like a thumb, whatever. So the flying.
What's the thumb thing? No, oh, like the Bill Clinton?
Yeah, they do that rather than that.
Gotcha.
Because this is like direct and mean and then they do that, which is kind of, it takes off the edge. But the flying thing, because that had to do with the whole Superman and him flying, and he would go places where there was the one trip that he took by himself, no luggage, like Superman did, just went with no – he didn't carry anything.
Yep.
He just flew somewhere.
He just had his blue suit.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So did you know that's a true story with the pudding cups? Mm-mm. Yeah, there was a dude, P.T. Anderson, got that from real life. There was a guy – I can't find his name. Doesn't really matter. That in real life figured out that there was a healthy choice promo for Sky Miles, and he figured out that pudding cups you could get for 25 cents a piece, cash them in, and it exceeded the value of what he would pay. So Time Magazine wrote articles about him, Washington Post. He literally spent $3,000 to get like 1.2 million air miles.
Wow.
And did the rounds on talk shows. And Paul Thomas Anderson saw this and was like, that's a great little subplot for a movie.
Wow.
Yeah, so it really happened. And
that's a lot of miles.
That is a lot of miles. And he's still flying on those. I read an article from like last year.
Really?
Yeah, because the way – I don't know how all that stuff works, but he's still like cashing in on those miles with his like lifetime diamond status.
Wow.
He gamed the system legally and very important. and donated. Here's the great news to that. He could not because if he donated, I'm sorry, if he got the pudding cups in 1 month, they would double it. But he didn't have the time to do it all. So he got volunteers from the Salvation Army to get these barcodes loose from the pudding cups. And then he donated all the pudding to the Salvation Army and then got to write that shit off on his taxes.
I was about to say, if he got the Salvation Army to do all that, and it was like, and I got it 1.2 miles. It's like, what's the Salvation Army getting out of that?
Pudding.
Pudding.
Yeah. Win-win? I don't know. So anyway, I was kind of blown away that that was actually a real thing.
Yeah.
But in the movie, these pudding cups kind of become an obsession and mm-hmm. clearly like sort of his salvation of this thing that he has, that like this one thing he can control is this loophole that he finds. And of course, that ends up leading him going to Hawaii to chase down this woman. Chase down, that sounds really bad because it's a very sweet thing that he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, go after his love in Hawaii, which is very sweet.
Yeah, and speaking of control, that kind of personality that just everything with his sisters and everything was so kind of crazy, and it was like, but I can hone in on this.
Uh-huh.
You know, he just kind of got like, this seems like I can kind of, not manipulate, but I can put my focus here.
Right.
When everything else seems to be falling apart.
Yeah, and his sisters, the actress that I can't remember.
There's also that theory
of
like the seven sisters of seven deadly sins.
Oh.
If that has something to do with it.
Again, is that from Daryl?
Paul Thomas Anderson is like, shut your face, Al.
The sisters are voiced all by the one actress, actually, because of all the phone messages. But then when you see them, they're obviously different actresses.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just such assholes to him. And it felt so bad that they would just berate him.
I know, in that scene, Smigel, who played his brother-in-law, when he's in the, I guess, the laundry room or something.
Yeah,
like
after
that.
He bashes in the window of the sliding glass doors.
Yeah, and there's and the guy's like, was he a therapist? Was,
he's a dentist.
A dentist, that's right. And,
which is a funny joke.
Oh, that's right. And so he takes him in the laundry room, and, you know, just that moment, you're just like, oh, I get it, dude. You're just being beat up, and he just breaks.
Yeah.
And just falls apart. And then Smigel's like, I don't know what to do here.
Yeah, and he clearly needs therapy.
Oh, yeah.
For years, had needed therapy.
Yeah.
And he's the one guy, he's like, you know, I can make some calls and find you someone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really kind of easy
to get
a therapist.
Yeah.
But I think everyone sort of relates to Barry a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
On certain days, you know?
Yeah. I was just such a fan of, and again, it kind of goes back to, you know, being the asthmatic kid in Goonies, where he's all of a sudden has just becomes this hero in the very end, and just always that transition of like starting off kind of defeated and isolated, but then when that love came in, he just transformed.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
And he goes to Hawaii because she basically invites him. She's like, you know, if you're going to go anyway, and he's on the phone with her with that parade going by. Actually, he's on the phone with his sister.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find out what hotel, and that's when he finally snaps with the sister. It's like, I will fucking kill you! Like, give me her hotel!
Yes, yes,
and he
finally
loses it and, like, takes control against these sisters who, these oppressive, vulgar sisters who've just been keeping him down.
Yeah.
And you don't know the family dynamic there at all, other than you get the feeling that they've just been on Barry's ass his entire life.
Oh, yeah, and the contrast of the passion that he showed getting her information or number compared to when he's with her and it's just like still awkward and it's he still doesn't know. You know, it's like that kind of like, I want it. And then he's in front of it and he's like, ha, 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 this is very new. And it's such a contrast from that, you know. Anyways.
And there's two great kiss scenes, the first kiss and the second kiss. The first one where he leaves after their first date. He walks – it's so wonderful. He walks down the hall from her apartment, and as he's passing the apartment office, the lady says, are you Barry? I'm like, there's a phone call for you. Mm-hmm. And it's her saying, you know, I wanted to kiss you or something. Mm-hmm. And then he can't find her apartment, and he's running around looking for it, and it's this maze of long hallways with exit signs.
Yeah.
And apparently those are all white, and that's where white factors in is his like loss of – right?
Daryl. Superman. If you remember where he was born.
Thumb.
Remember he was born in an all-white.
Yeah.
There was all that white.
Guys, Fortress of Solitude.
I'm reaching now.
Uh-huh.
But.
So he runs back, and they have that great first kiss. And it's not even sexual. It's because they kiss and then she just hugs him like I don't want to make it creepy and say like a mom hugs her son, but it's a comfort, yeah. You know.
Well, it's that being isolated and then finally finding connection.
Yeah, and she gets it. You know, yeah. She gets him.
Yeah.
And then the second one, the favorite moment of the movie for me was when they kiss in Hawaii, and there's that great shot where they come together with the blue ocean behind them, and they're in silhouette, and Paul Thomas Anderson sends this rush of extras crossing in front of them and behind them, like dozens and dozens of people. And then it's with the music, and then they all fade away, and it just shows those two, and their foreheads touch. And in between them, the light forms a heart. And it's just such a, like, there are no accidents in this movie cinematically.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And because it's P.T. Anderson, everything is just designed within an inch of its life, from that first shot where it shows that weird desk all by itself in that huge warehouse in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
It all, just,
all that negative space.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just
there's
great.
Also that, speaking of just kind of the thought he put into it, when he's going through the grocery store, this is another thing on this thing I watch, and she's kind of vaguely, there's this red figure that's kind of walking.
That's her.
And it's kind of like, but he looks back, but the fact that she's kind of coming into his life,
yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
That's great. And he does that just sweet little dance when he's collecting all the pudding cups with Louis Guzman, the great Louis Guzman, who should be like in every movie ever. And then at the end, that car crash that you were talking about where she has the blood and he kicks the shit out of those brothers.
Yeah, he does.
Because, you know, everyone knows that weird subplot with there's the subplot of the pudding cups and the Sky Miles and then this phone sex line that he calls.
Yeah, and just the irritation. Yeah, and knowing him, this is what Paul Thomas Anderson did so well too. Knowing how defeated he already had been, and just how isolated, and then somebody else taking advantage of that.
Right,
and you're just like, no, not this guy, not this guy.
Yeah,
you know, and he's just trapped.
It's like we want Barry to feel good.
Yeah,
and he just is over his head with all this stuff. But you know, the crowbar took care of that in a good way. And then finally, at the very end, he goes to her in that final scene in the shop. Like you said, he's playing that harmonium. She comes up behind him and hugs him from behind and says, here we go. And it's just such
and
a sweet
moment.
She
became his cape.
That's right.
Because he's Superman.
Such a lovely movie. And just, so, like I said, 97 minutes long. And it's not like there's not a wasted word in it, not a wasted shot. It's just also purposeful and lovely. It's great. All right, so we end, and we're going to have Q&A after, but we end Movie Crush, as you all know, with a couple of quick segments, one called What Ebert Said, because I always like to go back and see what the great Roger Ebert thought of these movies. He gave it 3.5 stars out of 4. You can ask what the half star was for.
But what did he, I'm curious what he said. Did you see what he said?
He loved it. So this is one pull quote. Punch
but
drunk
why
love.
Didn't he give it 4 stars?
This is what he put. He doesn't say, obviously. I guess he just thought it wasn't perfect.
Come on.
Punch Drunk Love is above all a portrait of a personality type. Barry Egan has been damaged, perhaps beyond repair, by what he sees as the depredations of his domineering sisters. It drives him crazy when people nose into his business. He cannot stand to be trifled with. His world is entered by alarming omens and situations that baffle him. The character is vividly seen, and the film sympathizes with him in his extremity.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, and I love that he's irritated by people coming into his life, but then she, just that surprise, he didn't know what he needed.
Right.
You know?
And I always get the picture, a lot of times I do this with movies, I try to imagine what happens after, and I think they are still happily living ever after, you know?
Yeah, my world.
Right?
Yeah.
Or she becomes abusive and manipulative.
She's the angel without hands that went to my friends. Yeah, so, guys, I got a whole story in my head.
All right, and then 5 questions with Tony Hale.
This scares me.
It shouldn't. Number 1, first movie you remember seeing in a movie theater? Don't say Goonies.
Well...
He saw a movie before you were 14. Come on.
Oh, shoot.
You're like, when in doubt, pratfall.
For those of you listening at home, I almost busted my ass. First movie I remember, I mean, I was going to say Goonies, but I would say E.T., I think.
Okay.
I don't know if that's, I think I just remember being in the theater and being very moved by that. Yeah.
Right. Good answer. Yeah. First.
Another Spielberg.
Yeah. First, and speaking of Spielberg, the lens flares in Punch Drunk Love.
Mm.
Very Spielbergian
mm-hmm.
little trick there.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know what a lens flare is?
No.
Some of you? If you see Punch Drunk Love, all those moments where the light sort of bursts sideways over the screen, like a blue light will flash, that's a lens flare.
Which
and it's something you're not supposed to, it's technically a mistake, but you can also use it as a technique.
Which they try to use when you're trying to put together a family movie on iMovie on the Apple, but it's not as good.
Oh, is there a thing?
There's a title you can put of like Summer 2017 and has a lens flare, but not as good as PTA did it.
Gotcha. First R-rated movie you saw
okay.
at all.
All right. It was Porky's. And my mom, this is a true story, rented it, not knowing, thought it was kind of a, I don't know if she thought it was Porky the Pig, but there was something, she didn't think it was what it was.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it with my dad, and which was...
For how long? Until it was
a joy. And I remember him turning to me and saying, "This is your first lesson on sex education."
Really?
And I was like thinking, I don't know if that's the best tool. Yeah.
We're the same age. And I remember Porky's, especially as a little Baptist kid, it was
a lot.
It was like the filthiest movie I'd ever heard of.
Because
there were all the body parts were in it.
Yep.
Male and female. And you knew this as a kid. And around school, people were like, "Have you seen Porky's?"
Yeah.
Dumb movie though. Like, have you?
I have not
seen it again.
Since. No.
Don't bother.
No.
Don't watch it with your daughter. It's not good. Number three. Will you walk out of a bad movie?
It would be hard, but I think if it's something like that, I'm gonna bust again with doing this with my chair. But it's if it's something like, I don't like, if somebody's like, "Oh, no, see this horror movie or see this thriller, it's not that, da da da." If I know this is gonna stay with me, then I will walk out. Because some people can see that stuff and be like, "Oh, wasn't that fun?" Like, say you're watching something about this guy like stalking somebody or something like that. Like, and then they leave and they go, "What's that fun? Wasn't that fun?" I leave and I'm like, "Someone's after my family."
Uh-huh.
You know, like, I gotta take care of this.
Right.
You know, so it does, it doesn't leave me. I will go home and be closing a blind and be like, "He's gonna be on the opposite side of the window."
So that's what would cause you to leave, not that this is so bad that I can't watch it.
No, I don't think I'd ever leave something if it was so bad. I would leave just because I know how it would affect me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, did you guys like haunted houses as kids? Thank you. I don't get it. I don't get walking through an unknown space and people grabbing you.
Well, and some of those now are like you sign a release. They are so extreme.
Why do they put themselves through that?
I don't know.
There's so much fear in the world. Why are you walking through that? Just watch CNN for an hour and you'll be as freaked out as possible.
Is anyone into that? Those really extreme haunted houses?
People get rushed out of it. No judgment, but I don't get it.
Say what, sir? So it's all right, for you can't hear that, but he said there was a girl who got kidnapped. It's one of those things where you sign up to get kidnapped.
Guys, come on. I mean, I'm serious. That's really by the way, I don't know if you guys knew, abduction happens.
Right.
So why are we gonna recreate it in a cute little house and pay money to go do it? I wanna pay $10 to be abducted.
Yeah. I could binge Veep, or I could go get abducted and pay for that.
I really do not understand it at all. It's actually kind of makes me mad.
Well, and it's also a little
sad.
Also,
why do I want to sit in a dark room with a bunch of people and watch somebody like those Saw movies or whatever?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Because, by the way, there's people out there that do that shit. Or who's going to sign up to watch Paranormal Activity? Nope.
Right.
That shit's real. I'm not playing with that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not sitting in a dark room and watching that.
Here's a movie that will make you fear going to sleep in your own bed every night.
No, yeah. I'm already freaked out.
I think it's someone that signs up, and I've heard of those, sir, when you sign up for this thing where they literally kidnap you. Like, there's something...
Hold! Just what?
There's something going on with...
Wait, are you serious?
No, it's a thing. No, you think we're all, like...
Wait, that's not what you're saying, though. You were saying it's in a haunted house, right?
You've heard of, like, escape the room?
Let me ask you something. Does this person know they're about to get kidnapped? Because you, like, surprise
a
friend?
I think you don't know when it's going to happen, though, right? Isn't it, like...
Like, for your birthday, I got you a gift. You're going to be kidnapped.
Sometime between June 3rd and 10th, you will be kidnapped. It's that kind of thing.
What the fuck is wrong with these people?
Oh.
I mean, that is wrong. That's coming from childhood trauma. There's something that happened
in that person's
life. Well,
that's my point. Yeah, something is wrong with that person.
Like, they're reworking. They're trying to work something out. Yeah. That's the wrong way to work it out. Hire somebody to help you work out. Don't hire him to kidnap you.
And the dudes who think of that as a business, like, I got something, guys.
Right?
The ice cream truck's not working out, so what if we kidnap people?
God, that is really messed up. That is true.
Yeah.
Because there's all those things now which I kind of like, the where you go and you have to figure out the code and get to a different room.
Escape the room.
Escape
things.
Room. I don't like the word escape, but I like the idea of a puzzle, and you do that.
Puzzle rooms.
Yeah, let's call it puzzle rooms. Let's call them crossword rooms. But I think that's kind of fun.
You're just talking about a retirement home now, I think.
But if these rooms are, like, well lit.
Yeah.
You know.
Clean,
happy colors. Uh-huh. I'm all about that. Right. I don't want some goth escape room or something like that.
We actually, Emily and I, Janet Varney, who is one of the co-founders of Sketchfest, we did an escape room in Atlanta with her and a group of her castmates. From
what
State
was the
people.
Theme? Nightmare on Elm Street.
What was it, Emily? Do you remember?
It was like a museum.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's like you're in a museum. And
was there, like, spider webs in the museum? Is it like that kind of a museum?
It was pretty fun and, like, innocuous.
Yeah,
I wasn't very good at it. Janet was on that shit. Like,
yeah.
You know, she
well, there's
the
a timer, right? You have to do it a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
I think that's. There's ones I'm sure that are freaky, but then there's ones that I can do. Yeah.
My friend and I were just too obsessed with making jokes the whole time.
Yeah,
and I think Janet got a little annoyed. She's like, Chuck, can you help? Can you bring this in?
Well, I would be going in the corner just crying.
Right.
It's time to leave. Tony, could you, like, help? No, because shit's about to get real.
All right, number four. Do you have a guilty pleasure movie that you go back to? And by guilty pleasure, some people don't have them, but usually that's a movie that kind of sucks, but you just will watch it no matter what.
Yeah. I don't know if... I mean, I'm a huge sucker for Waiting for Guffman.
But that movie's great.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't suck. Are you saying it has to suck?
Well, I mean, isn't that what a guilty pleasure is?
Probably.
Like, I watch Sweet Home
Alabama. I'm learning a lot
with
today.
Reese Witherspoon over and over.
Okay, not that.
They're turning on you.
I know, right? I'm so sorry. I'm a very sensitive, fragile man, clearly. I mean, I don't think it's bad, but I've always liked Wizard of Oz.
All right.
I know, guys.
So Tony Hale doesn't know what a guilty pleasure is, everybody.
I'm trying to think of, like, The Room. I've seen The Room. I've only seen it once, but I'd see that again.
Was that the lady that, and the kid?
No. God, I will never see that.
You didn't see it at all?
I will never, ever see that movie.
Oh, you mean The Room, the James Franco thing?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, The Room is tough.
Damn it.
Or A Room, I think is just the name of it.
They're in solitary confinement, a mother and a son, their whole lives, right? And somebody... what? I lose breath thinking about that.
Yeah.
Man, the fact you're even saying that is traumatic.
Sorry.
It really is awful.
You're like, that's my guilty pleasure. Immense pain.
Because, by the way, guys, there have been people that have been trapped in basements their whole lives, haven't seen light.
That's kind of your
go-to. Let's do a movie about it.
For anything bad, you're like, that happened.
It did happen. Anyways, guilty pleasure, a bad one, because I don't want the audience turning on me.
Just name it.
I'd say The Room. Yeah, I'd say The Room, because I've seen it once, and I'd see that again, because right. It's just funny. Maybe old, over-the-top musicals are kind of fun to watch, where everything is just like, bah! You know, it's like really bad show choir on film.
Uh-huh, I got you. I would argue that all show choir is bad, but my wife would get angry.
Are you going to turn on him? Because I might.
Emily grew up doing show choir.
I was in Studio Singers in Tallahassee, Florida.
Okay,
and
there we go.
We did wear blue sparkly vests.
Did you solo and stuff, or were you just
sell the vests?
No, solo. Yeah, did you sell the vests?
Maybe we had to make a buck.
Because you could now. Did you have solos, performances, or were you just part of the big group?
It was like a group, and we had like an Americana theme where the blue sparkly vests. But I never had a solo because I didn't have a very good voice.
Okay.
But I was a good dancer.
Really?
Yeah. Baptist kid.
If I were James Lipton, I would make you dance right now, but I'm not going to do that.
No.
Okay. And then finally, Movie Going 101, what is your, when you get out to the theater these days, sort of, what is your thing? Where do you sit? Buy popcorn? What's your ritual?
I like popcorn. I like putting M&M's in my popcorn.
Yes. Peanuts?
I like just a plain, because I don't want any protein in my bag. No, I like the salty sweet thing. Yep. But I sit on the end, because I always am the guy that if I have to go to the bathroom, I don't want to like get through people.
So you sit on the aisle?
Cut to tonight. I had to go to the bathroom 3 times before this night, as you know.
I was told by someone who maybe even in this room, there's an app now called Go Pee or something like that. What's it called?
Run Pee.
Run Pee, where if you say what movie you're watching, they will tell you the best time to go and what has happened while you're gone. Isn't that great?
It's great. But if I had to go and I knew that I had to wait 5 minutes, I'm like, I'm going to pee all over this. You know, my head would get like, I still got 10 minutes before I can go to the bathroom.
Well, I think you can do that too, though. If you just have to go, you can also say, I'm going now, and they will tell you what's happening.
Oh, I see. Okay. However, how do they handle that with people getting so pissed with someone turning their phone on to look at a Just Pee app?
That's a good point.
And like, that's on. They'll lose Just Pee.
Right.
It's like, well, I'm in the story, man. I don't care about your screen.
Right. Is there a poop version, too?
Do you guys watch Black Mirror?
Yeah.
I haven't seen the new one yet.
But because that shit happens.
Well. But there is one episode, because my buddy's in it, that's in the new season, but they're in space.
I haven't seen the new season yet.
So I'm excited watching it. But I'm a little like, because I've heard it's really intense. The reason I thought about this is where my mind's going, is because the Black Mirror on the phone. And guys, I'm tangent man. But I've heard that episode is not, it's intense, but maybe not as intense. Right? Has anybody seen it? Okay. Thank you.
Is it Tony Hale safe?
Is it Bambi?
It's funny because there's a little bit of Gary in you, isn't there?
A lot, I would say, probably. Well, I mean, I've dealt with anxiety most of my life, clearly.
Let's take it. Let's unpack
that. The whole audience
that.
Is like, really? But I think it's cool. I was talking to my wife about this. Like, whatever you deal with in life, it's cool how it's worked into it's worked into my career. I do it well.
Is that how that, like, how does that work when you
do emasculation really well?
But is that serendipity, or do, I guess an agent says, like, oh, you'd kind of be good as this because you're sort of like that?
No,
or does it just work out that way?
I think it just kind of, well, I remember, I had been doing commercials a long time in New York, and I was always the guy that was kind of not all there. And so I would, like, wide eyes and nervous. And then this Arrested audition came around, and Buster was kind of explained as a man-child. And this one lady was like, Tony Hale would be good for this. But I went in, and I auditioned for it in New York. And I remember Mitch saying that, because Buster massaged people a lot, he massaged people. Yeah. And I guess in the script it said I started massaging someone, so I started massaging my knees. But the audition cut off here, so he didn't know what was happening down here. And he was like, and I was intrigued. What is he doing down there? But not in a weird way. He was like, what? So anyways, and then they were interested in me, so I've got flown out there.
That's awesome. All right, I think we can take some questions. What time is it? Do you have 15 minutes?
Yeah, sure.
All right. You don't have to go to the mic. I'll just repeat the question for when we release this. So
ask me whatever. Clearly, I'm an oversharer.
Anything about
entirely
anything.
Too vulnerable.
It's all on the table. Anyone got anything in the back there? Hello, ma'am.
Hi, Tony. What character, if you could play any character in any movie, what would it be?
What character would Tony play in any movie? Is this historically or in the future? Whatever you want.
There's a couple. Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors, I would love to do. I think I'm too old for it now. Sam in Lord of the Rings. I appreciated his bond to Frodo. I think he was a very good friend.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know, there was just like a real brotherly, let's do this together. And I mean, I think that would be cool. And his job was to worry.
Good point. Yeah.
Which I'm the master at. That was so true.
It was funny. We were backstage, and 5 minutes into a conversation, he went, "Do you have asthma?" I went, "Not really." I was like, "Why?" He's like, "I just thought I heard you wheezing."
I did. And I told him I have my inhaler if you need it. It drives my wife crazy because we at restaurants, if. And I still to this day don't understand it, but I have a hard time not – if someone's too close to me, I'll hear their issues or I'll hear their conversations. And if there's a first date here and someone's having a fight here, I'll find myself like, should I make it better? Right. But I don't understand in restaurants why people are that close to people and unveiling such intense things.
Yeah.
I hear your trauma. Like I'm right here. Do you want me to do something about it?
Right. to cry for help?
Yeah, and then you like people with maybe voice modulation issues, and you're like, all right, that's tough. But I don't think you wanted to tell me that.
You know? Emily and I went to a wine bar last night, and there was this really cozy booth that this couple was leaving. And she was like, I'm not sitting in there. It's like, why? She was like, did you hear them on the way out? They were fighting. And she was like, oh, I just can't believe you. Like, why do you want to fucking do this? And she's like, unless we sage that, I'm not going in there.
I get it. Do you? And it doesn't even. You don't even notice. That's like my wife.
I didn't hear.
Yeah, my wife does. She has that gift where just does not even. Doesn't even hear it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I know everything in this room right here. Let's talk. Give me a glass of red wine, and we're gonna get into it.
Questions? Anyone? Ma'am, right there.
What's a day in the life on the set of
Arrested Development?
Oh man, I can only speak because this past week we were doing it, and Mitch is so, I think many times in scripts or stories you kind of have an idea of where something is going, and you're like, oh, I can have there's so much surprise. Like he'll just come up to you and be like, let's try this, or what about this, and it's just you're constantly wondering what's going to happen. And so it's both exciting and like you got to be ready. But it's everybody's really lovely. And Will Arnett's one of the funniest men out there. He's just constantly has a great joke. And I don't know, just Alia Shawkat, who plays Maybe, and Michael Cera. I mean, when we started, they were 14, 15.
Yeah, they were kids.
Now she's 28 years old.
It's crazy.
And so, I don't know, it's just you, we've been together for so, all of us together so long, it's just kind of, we've had babies and marriages, and it's really wild.
So cool.
But nothing beats the catering. No.
Well, and to come back together.
I do love free food. It just tastes better.
After the show going away and coming back together, it must be really nice, like a
it is
family
nice.
Reunion.
And I have to admit, when Netflix first brought us back, I was concerned, go figure, that there's a lot of expectation into the show, and I didn't know if we could bring Buster back the way somebody wanted to come back.
Right.
But I will say once Jessica Walter said, who plays Lucille, said Buster to me.
Yeah.
It was like a Pavlovian yes, mother.
And we did this scene last season where she's on, what is it called, when you have to stay home because you're arrested.
House arrest?
Yes, house arrest.
You know, you have to stay in your house.
She's under house arrest, and she can't smoke. And so I, as Buster, as the codependent child, have to inhale the smoke out of her mouth and then run outside and blow it out. And as an asthmatic, that was a fun day. I was like, and then I was like,
one of my favorite lines from that show was when she said, I'll be in the hospital bar. You know, Mom, bars don't have hospitals. Well, no wonder no one likes hospitals.
Yeah.
Just the notion of how, like, clueless she is. I'll be in the hospital bar. Yeah.
That reminds me of the doctor who is just so funny when my hand comes off and he's like, just like, how is he? And he's like, he's okay. And they're like, oh, and he's like, he's okay, but he's lost a hand, but he's okay. Right. Or something like that. He's all right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, that's right. Damn it.
Yeah. Sorry. I need to watch the show.
It's such a dumb joke. It's great.
People come up to me so many times and they, you know, have these stories that they've loved unarrested, and I don't remember much,
sure,
clearly. And I'm like, and they're like, oh, I'm sorry for bringing this. And I was like, no, tell me more, because that's hilarious. I totally forgot about that.
Uh-huh.
And there's so many things that I missed. Like, oh, you, wasn't that funny how this and this? I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But that sounds super smart.
That was very funny, though. And the doctor comes in and says, he's okay. Like, get it, everybody?
I'm sorry. That actually might have been the first time I got that, when she just said that.
Yeah.
That's how checked out I am.
For the catering.
Please.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
They do this tri-tip.
The food is amazing.
Really.
I just love free food. I really do.
Hint.
Bar. Just kidding.
You might have a potato skin coming your way.
Oh, man.
So. Yes, ma'am.
So, have you ever met anybody who was a part of Punch Drunk Love and, like, fanboys
with them
before?
Great question. So, you were asking if I've ever met somebody from Punch Drunk Love. I've met Adam Sandler, but we never talked. And I
just did a mime routine.
No, I apologize. I was at a restaurant and I was just introduced to him and I said hi, but we never like had a talk.
Sure.
We met and just stared into each other's eyes, but there was no communication.
Very weird. No,
but I recently met Paul Thomas Anderson because
we
were touring schools for my daughter, and I think him and his wife were bringing the touring of school. They were there, and we just shook hands, and I didn't say anything, but it's that moment where you're like, keep it together, Hale. Just keep it together. But he was very nice, and yeah.
Do your kids go to the same school or no?
No, because we're kind of looking for – we were kind of both positioned looking for schools for
gotcha.
Our daughter.
That's how people meet in L.A. That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
It's like you meet at the – I remember I met Tim Curry at the Vet one time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just – they're everywhere. They're just like us.
Your next podcast.
Who's next? I think we have time for a few more. Yes, ma'am, sure. Right here. Question, has anyone surprised me with their favorite movie on Movie Crush? No, because you never know what someone's going to say. Some of them have made total sense, like Kyle Kinane with Big Trouble in Little China. When, as soon as he said that, I was like, well, of course, that's Kyle Kinane's favorite movie. No surprises yet. I always find it's interesting, and it's kind of the whole reason I started doing this was sort of the not just like, oh, what's your favorite movie and let's talk about it, but sort of the underbelly of that, which is why – and actually, that's a good question. Like, what is it about Punch Drunk Love for you specifically?
I think without getting too intense, I think being a spiritual person, like,
mm-hmm.
I think my love for God, how it kind of strengthens me. And I think there was something just seeing his love come into his life – it like completely changed him.
Right.
But it was done in not a cheesy Christian film way.
Right.
You know, it was like powerful and beautiful and artistic. And,
right.
And I've just never forgotten it. Yeah.
It wasn't a Kirk Cameron movie, in other words.
No, it was not. but it was wherever somebody is, just that how that unknown can, there's no formula to it.
Right.
And it just completely can change your life. And, and I think we live wanting to have a formula, and there's just not a formula sometimes.
Yeah, and Barry is, like, angry as he was, his heart was open, as it turns out.
And I think everybody's. I mean, there is that. That can happen to everybody.
Who's next? Way back in the back, sir.
Tony, who's your celebrity crush?
Celebrity crush.
Past or present.
Past or present. Man, I would say Tim Conway on Carol Burnett Show. I just, him and Carol Burnett.
Yep.
I think there was a, and I would also throw Bob Newhart into that. Like, I think when I grew up, what him and Bob Newhart and Carol Burnett were doing, I was just so amazed by it. And specifically Bob and Tim Conway, because they never pushed the comedy. There was that one scene when Tim Conway would walk across the stage as an old man.
Mr. Tudball?
Yeah. And he was not really doing much, but it was so funny, and it was such a controlled thing. And he could do the smallest thing, and it was just hilarious. And it wasn't just like winking at the audience. He just trusted. He trusted that the circumstances were crazy enough that he could just sit in that tension, and it would be funny, rather than constantly pushing it.
Yeah, that was Carol Burnett Show was huge in my house. I remember being like 10 years old, and nothing funnier in the world to me was when Tim Conway would crack up Harvey Korman.
I know. And I want more of that.
Yeah.
And everybody on SNL, I know they get a bad, like, it's kind of maybe look down upon when they start laughing. Man, rewind that stuff constantly. Has anybody seen the when they went to Disney, Lindsay Lohan was hosting, Debbie Downer? And they all crack up. I've probably watched that 1,000 times. There needs to be more bloopers on live shows. And like, just that, it's because it's that humanity. And honestly, I don't really watch Arrested clearly much or Veep much, but I'll tell you what I watch is the gag reel that they always give us.
Oh, yeah?
I watch that stuff over and over because that's the life that I remember. Because I'm the one that breaks the most. And Julia actually said to me once, she said, Tony, we were in a scene, and I couldn't keep it together, and I was laughing, and she turned to me and she says, Tony, you know you're not watching the show, you're in the show. And I was like, yeah, but it's a funny show. But I love that. I love it. We need more of it.
Agreed. That's the best. I think we got some room for a couple of more. Yes, ma'am?
Will you ever do an episode on your favorite movie?
Question is, will I ever do an episode of my favorite
movie? I was about
to
ask that, what yours is.
Oh, well,
I know.
It's
a lot.
Troubling because it used to be a certain Woody Allen movie that you can't kind of really do that anymore. So I've had to kind of push that to the side. Jaws is actually one of, if not my favorites, and I've already covered that with another guest. No. Because that shit happens.
It does. No. Funny you mention that. Because every time I'm in the ocean, I think about
it. Do you really? Still?
Yeah. Does anybody else? I hear the music. I remember being on this retreat with my friend somewhere at the beach, and we were in this like catamaran thing. But anyways, it fell over, and we were in the water, and I had eczema as a kid, open sores. So I was like, I'm floating calamari for whatever, just come at me.
Yeah.
I heard the music. I saw the image of the shark underneath the body on the top of the water. I was like, right here, you know?
You were chum.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was a rough one. I can't believe I sat through that. I did, but we were kids.
Yeah.
I probably went with some friends and thought, oh, this is cool, and then it just traumatized me for life.
Yeah, like, I can't leave.
I love that before I was talking about the ocean being this peaceful place.
Right.
Well, that ruined
where people
it.
Die. All right, we got one more. Yes, sir, right up front.
So you told us some of your phobias. What's your greatest phobia?
Oh, man.
Greatest phobia, Tony Hill. Good last question.
Greatest phobia. I would say probably heights. There's something about heights that just we went to this family camp this past summer, and we did a ropes course.
Uh-huh.
And my daughter is just free and da-da-da-da. Man, it was hard. It was hard because one click I don't know. There's just something about it. I want her freedom, but it just terrifies me.
Did you feel like you had to hide that from her, your fear?
Oh yeah. Well,
and
but
be
then
brave
it stopped.
Dad.
I was like, I'm going to be brave. And then I got up there and I was like, yeah, shit's got real. Uh-huh. I got to be honest about this. But, you know, I don't know what it is when you it's like, you know, when you're on a balcony. And I don't – the thing is, I'm not – I'm not – this is going to sound dark, but it's that thing of I don't want to jump, but I'm afraid I'm going to jump.
We've talked – it's there's a French expression for that. I can't remember it, but we've talked about that on Stuff You Should Know before. Driving off the cliff or jumping off the building, it's a thing.
I don't want to be given the choice.
Right.
You know, and it's like, again, not suicidal, love my life. Mm-hmm. But there's something about if given the choice, I don't want to be given the choice.
Right.
Because I'm worried what my body might be like, ah!
Right. And then on the way down, you're like, wrong choice.
Wrong choice. Damn it, why didn't someone stop me?
Yeah. All right, thanks everybody. Thank you, Tony Hale.
Guys.
Thank you for coming.
Oh man, oh man, did I have fun doing that one. It was so much fun being on stage with Tony and getting that feedback from the listening audience there. That live audience is just, there's nothing like it. And I look to do more of these in the future. It would be so much fun. Even if I can get 100 people in a room in any given city, it's well worth it for me and a lot of fun. So, thanks to Tony. It was great hearing him talk about Punch Drunk Love and for everyone to get him, to know him a little better as Tony Hale and not Buster Bluth or Gary from Veep, two great, great all-time movie, TV characters. And, Tony's just such a good guy. So, thanks to Tony Hale. Thanks to everyone who came out. And thank you all for listening. And until next week, take off that 10-gallon hat, Mr. Cowboy, because I cannot see the movie screen.